Match Boy. Overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios, Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Badge Boys, where two retired cops talk to the community. I'm retired silent witness sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix police officer Jason Schechterly.
And we have a very special episode. Unfortunately, so timing with all these shootings. This episode, we're going to bring in two special guests. First, Dave Acosta, SWAT team instructor extraordinaire, mental fitness and coach, motivational speaker, and corporate cultural expert and trainer. This guy has been across the world and back teaching about this very topic. Then we're going to have Mark Williams. He's retired law enforcement in the Arizona Attorney General's Office, educator with the Phoenix Union High School District. That's right, cop turned teacher. Wrote a book called 47 Seconds. He's going to talk about mass shootings at school. So we have a very, very special episode that you want to hear. Then we go into cop talk. We'll talk a little bit, recapping those two guests. Then we go into our last segment. We're going to talk about stupid suspects galore, heroic headlines, and so much more. So stay tuned, stay informed, and most of all, you're going to be entertained.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'll never forget.
Never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. I am incredibly fired up for this episode today, and our first guest, somebody I am going to call a friend. I've only been blessed to meet Dave Acosta once. He is a member of Eagle Rise Speakers Bureau, as am I. And Dave's just one of these guys, as soon as you shake his hand, as soon as you look in his eye, you know that this is your kind of guy. And a little bit, quick background, 20 years, Dave has worked side by side with some of the world's most elite performers. He began in law enforcement. He worked in Vegas, including being the point man on their SWAT team for, I believe, 6 years. And Dave's going to correct me if I'm wrong. I think he moved on to King County Sheriff's Department, which is an incredible organization up in Washington. And today he travels all over the world, passing on his expertise from school teachers all the way up to corporate executives, identifying qualities of leadership, talking about fight or flight syndrome. And what we're going to talk about today, it goes without saying that this is an incredibly hot topic, but from a personal standpoint, I'm retired law enforcement. I have children that are in college. I have a child who's in high school. And every day, Dave, every place that I go that has a mass amount of people, I know by definition, mass shootings are one location and what, four or more people, according to the FBI or whoever we want to talk about. Every place I go, every restaurant I'm in, every grocery store I'm in, airports, it doesn't matter. I am constantly thinking, this could be the next place. What would I do? Where's the nearest exit? Where's the nearest child? Would my fight syndrome kick in and not my flight? These are things that are near and dear to my heart and things that I am concerned with every day. So I know if I'm thinking about them, and so is everybody else. And we could spend 8 hours debating gun safety or ridiculous things that politicians say or whatever. The fact of the matter is mass shootings are happening. They're happening a lot. They're not going to stop anytime soon. And I'm more of a case-by-case kind of guy, like the deal in Odessa the other day. Guy got fired.
Yeah.
He gets pulled over by a cop. He shoots the cop, and he ends up going on a rampage. That one, I'm like, I don't know what you could do when a mail truck's driving by firing rounds at you. But when you talk about what happened in El Paso at Walmart, when you talk about what happened in Dayton, Ohio, when you talk about Parkland, Pulse nightclub, all these things that I know you're an expert on, so I am going to shut the hell up, and I would love for you to explain to me, as well as our audience, how do you prepare, how do you educate, and how can you take away the assumed authority that a guy with a gun has and protect yourself?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, right now, it is a hot topic. It's very unpredictable as well. It's interesting. I had the opportunity to work with Operation Underground Railroad. Some of your listeners may know who that is, Tim Ballard and his team. I did a podcast with them, and that's Slave Stealer, if anyone wants to follow that as well. But yeah. just something that you brought up reminded me of the conversation I had with Mark Mabry, who's associated with Tim and that program. And, you know, we weren't on air. And he said, Dave, he said, you know, it's interesting to me. We're trying to make the world aware of child sex trafficking. And he's like, it's a great cause. People want to help. Anything with kids, people want to help. But we're working every day to help people become aware of it. He said, what you're talking about is on every parent's mind. And you touched on that. You're absolutely right. Even as a law enforcement guy, you know, typically let's lay this out for the listeners. Cops, generally speaking, I'm generalizing here, but you know, we don't walk around with this mindset where we're worried about worst case scenario. You know what I mean? Where we're always like, oh my gosh, you know, what happened today? We're the guys that and gals that you call when a chaotic thing happens, and we come in and we're pretty well trained. And if you have experience, you're good at managing chaos. But at the same time, you're on duty. Your kids are at school. Who is going to manage the chaos on behalf of your child while you're on the street doing other stuff? Does that make sense, that question?
That makes great sense.
And it's terrifying, you know, because as a cop, you see the worst of the worst, and you know what these crazy wackos are capable of if they go into a place that is a soft target. So that said, you know, it's always been on my mind. In spite of all of the things I've done around the globe, the one thing that I couldn't wrap my head around is that how in the United States of America, such a great country, this is still an epidemic. And what I've come to realize over the last 9 years of really diving into this mass shooting thing is that, generally speaking, our culture believes a guy that steps into the room with a gun is in charge. And nothing could be further from the truth. So that's kind of what the premise of Fight Back Nation is and you know, what we stand for. And a lot of people do ask me, they're like, hey, well, you know, let's have the debate. Let's talk about teachers having guns in the school. Let's talk about gun control. Let's talk about all these other topics that in a lot of cases are divisive. And I never get baited into that because I tell people, listen, I'm a statistics guy. You know, historical data means a lot to me. 99% of the people present during a mass shooting in America are unarmed. So let's focus on giving that group of people the tools that they need to survive. And with a focus for me, right now, my focus is on schools and teachers. So that's where we're at. And I don't know where to take it from there. You guys tell me which direction to go, or if you have a question, I'll dive in and I can explain the theory behind what we're teaching.
Well, for me, I'd like you to, like I said, I take things on a case-by-case basis, and mass shootings, whether it be in schools, whether it be in Walmart, whether it be at a workplace like the one in Virginia Beach a few months ago, they're equal in the sense that they're violent, they're unexpected, there's a lot of death, but they are unequal in the sense of you do not know the how, the when, or the why. And what it boils down to me is I'm tired of hearing about thoughts and prayers. I'm tired of hearing about gun control only in the sense, not because I'm a cop, not because I'm a Second Amendment guy. What I'm saying is if my son, one of my sons who's in college right now, if he gets killed today in a mass shooting, I don't want your prayers. I don't want to hear about gun control. I want to know what he could have done to empower himself in that situation. I want to know what I can do when I leave this podcast and I go to the grocery store to empower myself, because you don't know when it's coming. You don't know what to expect. You don't know how it's going to go down. How do we, at the end of the day, I want to continue living, and as do other people. So that's what I want to hear from you, is how do I empower myself? How do our listeners feel a little more empowered with the fears in the world today?
Awesome. Okay, let me lay it out real quick. So here's typically the audience that I'm speaking to. Actually, let me give you a little bit of history. Let me back up a little more. There's a guy, his name is Dr. John Gydek. He wrote Terror at Beslan, an incredible book on this mass shooting that happened at a school in Russia. He wrote Shooter Down, which chronicled the experience of the law enforcement officers that responded to Virginia Tech. Donnie Goodman is a good friend of his, and Donnie and I are associates. We talk a few times a year. Donnie's an amazing guy. You should look at having him on here as well, because he was a SWAT commander at Virginia Tech.
Awesome.
But anyway, we've got these guys. I'm on the phone with John Gydek. This is years and years ago. I said, John, I've got to do something. I'm going to teach teachers to physically, like worst case scenario, physically disarm a shooter. If at the very last moment, you know, when you're face to face, don't just huddle. Don't just think, oh shit, it's over. Dude, fight back. So he said, Dave, he laughed at me. And he said, Dave, you're talking about teachers. You're talking about, you know, typically a lot of them are women, but regardless, they're compassionate, they're loving, they're patient, they're sweet. And he named off all these soft qualities that he thought would be, you know, that might get in the way of what I was trying to say.
Right.
And I said, John, for every reason you named, for every quality you named, that is the reason why. It's mama bear times 100.
Oh, yeah. That's the word I was going to use. You do not want to mess with that.
No. I mean, and who has the capacity to love 30 children that belong to strangers? These teachers, they just want a tool. They want mama bear to be set loose. So as I started getting involved and training the teachers on this, and you have to understand, we're talking about worst case scenario. I want to interject here. In most of our schools right now, and by the way, please don't let me forget to talk about the evolution of law enforcement, because I just spoke on it in Sao Paulo, Brazil, but I'll come back to that.
Okay.
These teachers, they want to, and they're willing to. And I want all the parents out there to know, at least in my experience, we'll have trained over 7,000 teachers by the end of October this year. We have found that in public schools and charter schools from 12th grade down, if most of them have rooms that lock, just lock, simply key lock or push button lock, the doors lock. If the door locks and you get your kids in there, you're golden. I just want people to know we are better prepared than they realize in schools. Okay. So that said, let's jump to worst case scenario, that the teacher finds herself now having to counterattack the shooter. You know, as I'm trying to get teachers to buy into this mentally, I give them this example. I tell them, I want you to imagine that you're at this beautiful place here in Utah. We have the Provo River, and we have this massive waterfall called Bridal Veil Falls right next to the Provo River. So I give them the example that you're at the river. It's gorgeous. You're at the waterfall. And before you know it, in a blink of an eye, your three-year-old child falls in the river. Now, it's spring runoff. The river's massive. It's super fast. Do you stop to assess the speed of the water? Do you stop to assess the temperature of the water? Do you stop to assess the fact that you're a horrible swimmer?
No.
You go in.
You just
without
jump
hesitation.
In.
You jump in. Now, here's the thing. Yeah, you just jump in. But the chances of you saving that child are one in a million. And to be honest with you, the chances of you surviving are one in a million.
Right.
But here's the crazy thing. To a mother, one in a million, She will take those odds all day long.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
You're saying there's a chance.
And I'm the only mother in the room, and I would agree with you.
Hey Dave. Crazy?
So, yeah. Go ahead.
Looking back when I first became a cop, and you're talking about this paradigm shift with teachers, and I look at it the same exact way with law enforcement. When I came in and I was a cop in 1986, how we were taught to deal with a active shooter situation is wait for backup. And we know that's so flawed for so many reasons. And we saw how flawed it was in Florida, unfortunately, when officers were sitting around. Sorry, that's a little bit of a personal.
Believe me, I'm going to bring that up in a minute.
So if you would talk a little bit about that paradigm shift from what law enforcement was taught then and what we do now, and kind of equate that to others, you know, because we're, like you said, we're trained law enforcement. I still feel like I cop, you know, with 29 years on behind me. But there's individuals that are at a Walmart, at some type of, you know, large gathering, heaven forbid it to happen, like in Las Vegas. But what do they do? What do we need to teach them? Like what we saw with Flight United 93, where let's roll. How do we change that?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. You know, we have to have that mindset of, you know, and you guys have probably heard me talk about this before, but that first plane hit the tower, and then 20 minutes later, a second plane hit the tower, and then 40 minutes later, we've got a plane that hits the Pentagon. But that last plane, when they were aware of what was going on, those passengers decided that it wasn't going to happen. They weren't going to allow anybody to take a plane and kill innocent Americans. And they gave up their own lives, but they killed those terrorists. And no one has made it into a cockpit since then, even though it's been tried numerous times, because we had a paradigm shift. And in America, there are no marshals on those planes, okay? It's regular citizens that are like, no, you aren't taking a plane. And they'll tackle you in the aisle, and they will hold you down until the plane lands. So we've had that shift there. Now, we've had the shift in law enforcement, and this is one of the things that I'm now preaching to teachers. I'm telling them, look, we had a rude awakening when there was a 45-minute time gap at Columbine before the cops were on the shooters. That's not to say cops didn't go in there and rescue kids. They did. Cops risked their lives during that time. I don't want anyone to misinterpret that. There was a lot of brave things going on, but we hadn't had a paradigm shift in law enforcement when it came to the way we respond to active shooter. Now I've got a daughter that's 2 years into her career, 2.5 years into her career here in a local police department in Provo, Utah. And these kids are coming out of the academy better trained to respond to active shooter than I was as a full-time SWAT point man.
Wow.
They are not hesitating. And so the cool thing, and this is the thing I was so happy to talk about in Brazil, the evolution of U.S. law enforcement is that this new breed of cop is coming out of the academy without hesitation. When they respond to an active shooter, they exit their vehicle, they grab the weapon that they need, and they charge into the gunfire. So what we are talking about now, and I can speak specifically for Utah, we are talking about a 3 or less minute window before officers are on scene. 3 or less. So what we're asking teachers is, be your own first responder for 3 minutes. Can you hang on for 3 minutes? Can you do things that would save these kids' lives, preserve your life? And if it means fighting, fighting this guy face to face and getting what we call inside leverage, inside arm's length, so you could disrupt him, we're asking you to do that for 3 minutes because these kids are coming. They're going to come in there and they're going to put their life on the line to get right in this guy's face and take him on. And so what's crazy to me is that law enforcement has evolved, but as a country, we have not. We still choose generally when a guy has a gun to run, which is great. Run. You got to run.
Of course.
And hide if you need to hide. But if that option is not available, what do we do? Typically, people go under a desk or go to a wall and they can't move anymore and they huddle there. I have the raw footage from New Zealand. I watched every one of those victims do that.
Wow.
But what they don't realize is in that video, there's a guy who thought the shooter was reloading, so he thought the shooter, was gone, or maybe he had a chance. He made a break for it. He ran into the hallway, and on the shooter's own GoPro, this guy, you can see this civilian runs into the shooter in the hallway and knocks the AR out of the guy's hand. But then he doesn't get up. He stays down, and the shooter recovers his weapon and executes the person. What I'm saying is, it's easier than you think to disarm somebody. I mean, look at this kid Riley Howell over, University of North Carolina at Charlotte a few months ago. The shooter came in and opened fire. Riley House tackled him. And though he was mortally wounded, it allowed other students to jump in and disarm the guy. And only two people were killed. Yeah. You know, and then you look at what happened in that same week at the Colorado STEM.
Oh, yeah, that kid. What was his name?
No, Kendrick Castillo.
Yes. Saved so many lives.
Doesn't look like a Navy SEAL or a football player.
No.
He's just a sharp kid who didn't hesitate. He tackled the shooter, allowing another student, I believe his name was Josh Jones, to jump in. And this was not at the direction of teachers. These are two high school students that took it into their own hands to fight back and save fellow students' lives. I could sit here for hours and name off obscure cases that no one hears about because they don't qualify as a mass shooting,
right,
of unarmed people fighting back, getting inside arm's length on these guys, fighting back and disarming people. They can only shoot one person at a time. That's the dynamic of it. And now, at least with school shootings, we know they're operating on a three or less minute window. So, I mean, honestly, guys, we shouldn't feel like there's this dark cloud over us on mass shootings. What we should say is, dang it, the police have evolved. Let's all stop being victims. Let's all look for the first opportunity to fight back.
Let's roll.
Well, that's very powerful what you said about cops. I mean, you know the cops are coming, and you know they're better trained. But let's touch on that for a second, because I talk about this in my presentations all the time with just my own personal story about overcoming adversity and how my life was saved through police officers, firefighters, and just a lot of things that happened. And as you know, you probably have you were put in positions, just as an example, your 6 years as lead point on the North Vegas SWAT team.
Yeah.
Fight or flight syndrome really doesn't come into play. You know the plan, and you guys either execute it or you don't. That's pretty much what it boils down to for law enforcement.
Yeah.
But fight or flight syndrome still is very real. So let me give you two examples, and I just want to hear your thoughts on this. You have the Parkland shooting, where the videotape is pretty hard to watch from a law enforcement standpoint. As a former cop, I did not like watching that video. And now I think you have at least four guys that got fired, one possibly going to get criminally charged. And then let's do a 180 to the folks in Dayton. And I got to tell you, 1 week from today, I'm going to be speaking to the Dayton Police Department. I can't tell you how excited I am about this. But from the time that person started shooting until the time he is dead is under 60 seconds. Now, the contrast in law enforcement right there is stunning to me. What have you learned over the years, not as a SWAT guy who really didn't have a choice? You're going through the door and you guys prepped for hours and hours and kind of knew what to expect, or at least how to execute your game plan. In these sudden moments of impact, like at Parkland, Dayton, what have you learned over the years about how law enforcement is? Some are superstars and some sit and do nothing.
Okay. Awesome. I'm so glad you asked that. Let me go back to, it's Robin, right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Robin. Okay. Let's go back to Robin. She heard my story about the river. She said, I'm a mom. I'm in this room and I couldn't agree more. Let me tell you where we need to change things. You and I, all of us together, is a grassroots thing. We are not training people properly when it's about self-preservation. If it's about self-preservation, you're allowing certain personalities to say, ooh, man, that's too risky for me. I'm not involved. I've seen it. I have trained thousands of cops over my years, and there are cops that are like, ah, that just sounds like suicide to me. That's not for me. And the very first time that happened to me, I was like, wait a minute, didn't you choose to wear the badge?
I was going
to
say, what the hell did you put your name on the application for then?
Dude,
this guy literally told me,
literally told me, this was 2 weeks after Columbine. I'm a cop in North Vegas, and we're training some of our people there. And by the way, this guy wasn't the only person over my career that this happened, but it was the first time. And he's like, I'm not a SWAT guy. That's suicide. That's your job. And I was just like, floored. So I'm starting to find that it doesn't matter where you go, there's going to be those personalities. But
sure,
I think the mindset is wrong. If the mindset is mama bear or my teammate, you know, I wasn't a Navy SEAL or anything like that, but I was blessed to find myself in January of 2004 as a contractor working for a company that was Navy SEAL owned, and I was only working with SEALs and SF guys in Iraq.
Okay.
And something I learned from them within a week was the worst thing that could happen to them was not getting killed. The worst thing that could happen to them was cutting corners and not doing your job right because your brother would pay. It was never the guy that cut corners that paid the price. And so I look at Dayton and I think immediately, these cops, dude, there was no question that they weren't going to let the guy to the right or the guy to the left. And I think there might was even a female involved there because I thought I saw a female cop.
There was, yes.
Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, two guys and a female.
They didn't hesitate. It wasn't about the shooter. I'm going to tell you, deep down, it was about, there's no way in hell I'm going to let my partner run in there alone.
Yeah.
They reacted. So I'm just saying, man, when it is about someone else, if we can train our mind to make every critical incident not about us, it's about someone else, you are capable of so much more. And let me just drive this point home real quick. I was speaking to about 200 people here up in Salt Lake. It was a public forum. I was speaking on active shooter. They wanted to know what I was teaching in the schools because they were really excited about it. So it was mostly parents. And I was talking about the dynamics of an active shooter and how you know, the guy can only shoot one person at a time. If you're within 10 feet of him and he's not looking at you, you can cover that ground in a heartbeat. And there was a guy sitting there, and he was a really big guy. He's probably about 50, he's about 6 foot, really muscular. And here in Utah, you know, we have big families and we have our kids young. So I knew he was probably a grandfather. But he was telling me, he goes, Dave, I understand weapons. And if you put an AR, point an AR at me right now, he's like, I know it's over. He's like, I'm done. And I looked at him. I said, do you have grandkids? And he said, yeah. And it turns out he has a grandkid the same age as one of my grandsons, which is 6 years old. And I said, okay, let's just do this. Let's say that your six-year-old grandson was sitting right there, and I pointed about 8 feet to the guy's right, and I mocked as if I were swinging the AR over to this child. And the guy went ballistic. He's like, that's not even funny. Don't even bring my grandson into this. And I'm like, why? What would you do? And he's like, I will kill you. I will tear your head off of my
grandson. Yes.
He just got real crazy. And he stood up, and everyone in the room started clapping.
Yes, thank you. Point made.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, now let's calm down. Why is that kid's life more valuable than yours? Why are you looking at this when it's me pointing at you and going, oh, shit. But if I point at your grandson, you don't care how many times you get shot. You're going to tackle me and you're going to take me with you. I believe what I'm trying to preach to the world is this. Don't make it about you. Don't make it about self-preservation. Make it about the people that mean the most to you. And to a cop, the people that mean the most to a cop are innocents.
Yes.
Innocent people mean the world to us.
Just a beautiful.
You can't stand to see somebody suffer.
It's a beautiful thing to
hear. You know, at the hands of an asshole or a terrorist or a bully. Yeah. So what do we do?
Whatever happened to that, I'm not going to go down without a fight. Whatever happened to that mentality? It's like gone.
Let's roll.
Yeah. I'm not going down without a fight, man.
Well,
look, I'm telling you, you guys, this is not news to you, but look around at all of the groups that have formed over the last 2 years that are victims groups. There is a victims group for everything, everything. And this is the mentality that we have. We have so many people now focused on saying, well, I'm a victim of this and I'm a victim of that. And all of these things, I don't understand it. You know,
I don't know either.
What's going on.
Because you're right. It is a mindset.
I'm trying to tell people, look, you are capable of heroic things. It's in your DNA as a human being when it's not about you. That's when you're able to step up. And so that's what I preach. In our courses, I'm preaching, guys, don't think about self-preservation. Think about that little kid. Think about these 20 kids in this class. What would you do for them? And the teachers, man, their eyes catch on fire and they're like, just show me what to do.
Yeah.
I will kill this guy. And they do. Once they learn how to do this real simple move that we're teaching, it's exciting to see them at the end of a 2-hour session. They're just all fired up and our reviews have been great. We're on the verge of this program starting to gain some national attention and it's exciting.
Hey, Dave.
You know, it's not the... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, speaking of this program, can you tell us about that? And if there's someone listening that wants to learn more about that, where can they go to, my friend?
Yeah, so the program, it's called the Fight Back Nation Project, and you can go to fightbacknation.org. There's some information there. Again, you know, it's a grassroots thing. I'm pretty much started this by myself, so you know, if you're there, just know it's one guy kind of running it. But we have volunteers coming out of the woodwork, which is so exciting. So they can go to fightbacknation.org. They can check out our Instagram. It's kind of fun. It's also fightbacknation. Yeah. And you know, we have on the Instagram, there are actual videos of these teachers practicing these disarming techniques. They'll take like a hard angle in their room and turn off the lights. And by the way, it would blow you away how effective that is. We didn't realize it until we did something with one of the local SWAT teams here. Earlier in the year, the SWAT commander went in a room where the teachers were, and he came from a well-lit hallway, and they had turned off the lights and closed the shades, even though it was the middle of the day, and he never saw what happened. It was a female teacher that used this technique and disarmed him from an AR-15. And before he knew what was going on, he was on his face, his head was bleeding, and he's like, "Dave, I couldn't see anything. I, you know, couldn't believe how hard it was for me to come from the lighted hallway into a room where the teachers had turned the lights out and pulled the shades down." So there's a lot of simple things, but if the teachers, once you give them the tool, they're willing. You know, there's no question about it. So that's the program. We come in, we do level one. The first half of level one is we explain the dynamics of an active shooter so they can understand the evolution of law enforcement, what we do now, how quick law enforcement is there, what are some things that they can do, what are their expectations with time frames, so forth and so on. And then the second hour is physical. We literally have all these training guns, and we show them how simple it is to take an AR or a handgun out of somebody's hand, especially if it's unexpected. Then level two, which most of the schools that do level one bring us back to level two. Level two is just a review. And then most of the 2 hours is spent at the room that the teachers work in. For example, we'll put 10 teachers in a classroom and 10 teachers in the music room, and we'll have the lunch people, you know, we'll work in the cafeteria. And then throughout the 10 hours, you move from place to place, and the teachers have now come up with the plan that works best for them to barricade and, worst case scenario, counterattack. And that's a lot of fun because now they're actually using the techniques in the environment that they work in every day. So
that's
great.
That's outstanding, Dave. Seriously. Yeah, everybody, the website is incredible. Fight Back Nation. I follow Dave very closely on Instagram. It's a lot of fun. He touches on some fun family stuff as well as the training they're doing. And you know, I'm a huge,
yeah, we do.
Personally, to me, there's just nothing worse in the world than feeling helpless, especially when you it should be an inherent desire to help others and to be there for others. And what you're doing, the key word is empowerment. And you have to learn, you have to have some training, but most importantly, you have to just believe in yourself, and it's your mindset. And it could, we're seeing it every day. It could happen to any of us at any location in any city or town across the country. And I think what you're doing is just amazing. Your service to our country, I appreciate deeply, of course. And I appreciate your friendship, your time on the show. I think our listeners are going to get a lot of value out of your words today. And I really appreciate you, my friend. I look forward to the next time our paths cross.
Thank you, all of you, so much. I appreciate all three of you, and I appreciate the time that you gave me today, and it's an honor to be working with you. And if there's anything I can do for you, or, you know, anyone that is listening, could just reach out to me. All my contact info is on that website as well as the Instagram.
We will link everything, Dave. Thank you. Dave Acosta, everybody, thank you so much. God bless you, and be safe.
Thank you. Have all a great day.
We'll be right back with our next segment.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for fire. firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
What a great guest, David Costa. He absolutely nailed it, talking about that mindset that we need to get into. As police officers, I saw the evolution from 1986 when I became a cop to now. We go in, we take care of business. As United Flight 93 said so beautifully, let's roll. Let's roll. We're going to use that as a springboard for our next guest. We're going to talk more about schools. On April 20th, 1999, Columbine High School became a household name after two older teens killed 13 people, injured 21 in Littleton, Colorado. Now, 20 years later, school shootings have become so infamously commonplace that I challenge you to name the one since. Names like Moses Lake, Washington, Bethel, Alaska, Pearl, Mississippi, West Budak, Kentucky, Jonesboro, Arkansas, Edinburgh, Pennsylvania, Fayetteville, Tennessee, Springville, Oklahoma. I could be going on and on and on. And these are not famous places, but simply locations where school children have died in shootings. In 2019, there have been 22 school shootings with injuries or death. So bringing in now Mark Williams. Mark Williams is a retired law enforcement special agent with the Arizona Attorney General's Office. He was an educator once he retired with the Phoenix Union High School District. He is author of no less than seven books. The one that we want to talk about is 47 Seconds, What Educators Need to Know and Do During a Very Bad Day. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I think now your number is not 22. It's up to 28 or something now. So it just keeps going in the wrong direction.
Thank you. And this book, I can't wait to talk to you about this book, because this book is kind of like a handbook. It kind of springboard from what we talked with Dave to an actual kind of how-to guide for teachers. Can you tell us what made you write this book?
So I retired from law enforcement, went into education. You go shopping for your next job, and you go, what can I do reinvent myself? And so I did a lot of, I was a SME subject matter expert for APOST as an instructor. I was a defense tactics instructor. I was a physical fitness instructor. And in those small departments like the Attorney General's office, we kind of all carry on multiple roles. So I was the non-lethality instructor. I was not a range master. So I did a lot of adult education. I traveled across the country doing other types of specialty investigation type training. And so I was about 6 months out and decided, hey, I'm going to be an educator, because they work during the day. They don't
Good
travel.
And summer's off.
And yeah, the summer's off, and all the perks that you want. So I went into education. I was quickly drafted. I was hired by the Phoenix Union High School District, was hired at Trevor Brown starting in January, middle of the year, went into a class that had already four substitutes for the first semester. So they kind of threw me right into it, and it was wonderful. But they also drafted me to do crisis preparation, because schools in January 2001 were starting to recover from Columbine and starting to go, hey, what are we going to do? We need to maybe think through some stuff. So they decided to have a crisis plan. We wrote one. I wrote one for the school, and they were individually done at that time. And then I transferred schools after a year and a half to Central High School, where, again, I was drafted again into the crisis coordinator type role, and the district started to form a uniform plan. And as I began to get into that role, I decided, hey, there's no class for teachers. Where do teachers get educated on this stuff other than the little one-hour after-school training things that we would do? So I approached Grand Canyon University, and they said, we don't have anything, but would you like to create one? So they hired me to create a emergency preparedness for educators. And so they paid me to create that class. So I created the class, and then I said, hey, let's look for a textbook. And there isn't one. In the United States, there wasn't a textbook.
So guess what?
So I took a lot of the class and I put it into, and I'm glad you said it's a textbook. It's 95 pages. It's actually kind of a fun read because—
It's a handbook.
It's a handbook. But it is 47 seconds. 47 seconds, I came up with a title because that's how long it took me to button up my room in a high school and lock down 30 to 34 hormonal teenagers and get them small and get them quiet prior to—
In that lockdown procedure.
In that lockdown procedure. Get them out of sight lines, tell them to get off their phones, quit giggling, all that type of stuff. And it was average in my room about 47 seconds, and I thought that would be a name for a great book. The book itself is— the small part is on lockdowns, but it talks about— it's titled What Teachers Should Know About a Very Bad Day. What do you do for weather? What do you do for if you got to evacuate? What do you do? What do you do? What are you going to do if this shows up? And I was listening in on your broadcast from David Acosta, and it's that mindset, it's that preparation, it's that preparedness that educators are forcing themselves to try to believe that they have to do that. I mean, the difference between a cop's mindset or military or first responder and an educator is—
Vast difference. Oh, you shared with difference. Me a story. Would you mind telling me that story?
So we were doing an in-service. Teachers have in-service during the week. And so we were doing an in-service in the morning, and they were on a rotation, so I was getting— there's about 250 educators at Central, and so we would get rotations of A, B, and C, so you rotate every 45 minutes. And part of my section on that training was on lockdowns, how you do it, here's how you're doing it, let me give you some suggestions. And I had a teacher, and this teacher has been a teacher for 150 years, probably two. She has a master's, maybe two. I was trying to remember if she had two masters. And she said, she looked at me.
Intelligent person.
A very educated person. She looked at me and she said, can't the police just shoot the gun out of their hand?
And she was serious.
And she was dead serious.
A lot of
and
it was
dead being an optimal word.
And I could see, I could see the faces in the room turn to her while she asked the question and then turn back to me like, are you going to answer that question?
Yeah, that's a—
and a lot of them were saying, well, that makes sense to me. Can't they just do that? And
it's on TV.
And I asked her, I said, what would cause you to think that that was possible? She goes, well, you see it on TV all the time. And so I'm going, well, I went into—
But why?
You know,
that's
that,
not
the ability, yeah, for the, you know, a cop will only hit his target 22% of the time.
Say,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, in a high school. Hit anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have that mindset of, what am I going to do? And what this book basically does is it doesn't tell you what to do, because there's four of us sitting in this room right now, and there's four different responses we're going to have if a shooter came in the door behind me right now, what we're going to do.
Right.
And Robin's going to have a different response. You're going to have a different, you know, we're all going to have a different response. So what are we going to do? And what this book does is it asks you, and at the end of every chapter, it has a writing question and answer. So you actually are thinking it, writing it down, and spending time with what am I personally going to do? I had teachers around me that were not physically able to hide, fight, or flee. They're either their mindset or their physical ability would be a detriment in any one of those things. So what are you going to do here? What are you going to do in the library when you take your class in? And this book can apply to if your wife or your husband works at an insurance company. What are you going to do in the bullpen?
Having a plan.
Having a plan of something, because police training does this. When you go in as a recruit, and you guys will remember this, you go in as a recruit, they don't give you a gun and say, okay, let's go shoot it. They don't even give you a gun. I think you go into the room and there's a picture of a gun on the overhead, and they say, this is a gun. And then sometime later they have you touch the gun And then sometime later, they actually have you take it apart and load it. And it's several steps later before you go out and pull the trigger. So you are hearing it, seeing it, and then doing it.
And then familiarizing yourself.
Which are the three cognitive learning pipelines. You hear it, you see it, you do it. Audio, auditorily, visually, kinesthetically. And it's taken me 10 years to learn how to pronounce kinesthetic.
But, you
but that's an educator. That's the education side.
I used to work familiarized.
I was like, what? I still don't know what that word means.
You touch it. Okay, it's sure. Touchy.
I'm going to just stick with doing it.
Doing it, that's it.
Doing I love
it.
To do it.
That word, too big. That's okay.
So how was it received as far as when you were doing it at that time?
The book or the
instruction, the teachers, it sounds like a paradigm shift.
Well, and the teachers are, they were craving it. Oh, I can, okay. And of course, then they're hearing the news, right?
Sure.
They're hearing these events coming in, and they are, can you come by? And I would be very open. I would say, you need help in your classroom to decide where to put your kids? Ask me, I'll come over and we'll talk about it. And I never came in to anyone's classroom and said, well, you should just put them here. Because what are you thinking? And I would always ask them, where do you think they ought to go? Because
it's your class.
When the thing, well, it's their classroom. But
he's
also,
empowering them.
Well, and that's part of it.
Yes.
But also, what are you going to remember most?
Right.
Your creation or my creation?
Yeah.
Right.
So if I come up with it, I've reinforced that. Well, I think they ought to go here. Why do you think they ought to go there? Well, because there's a wall based on what they've heard. Common sense says, well, there's a brick wall here and there's a desk. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that.
And then can they see, can anybody see in, you know, talk about your sight lines? Oh yeah, I can. Yeah, that makes sense. We can move them over here. We can do this. We tuck them down here. I go, perfect. And so when any one of us comes up with a plan, we're going to remember our plan. FBI came up with a great, their hide, fight, flee, or is it fight, flee, hide, or is it, and what you don't want to do, I love it. I think it's a perfect term for action, but I do not want to be standing there going, do I hide, do I fight, any hesitation.
An instructor one time told me, have a plan. Even if it's a bad plan, it's better than no plan.
Because it's going to kick in. And part of the training, I've gone to several school districts and we've done this, and I have a PowerPoint, and there's a great scene that I use from Saving Private Ryan, and they just land on the beach, and Tom Hanks is there, and he's overcome, you know, his hearing's gone because of the blast and stuff, and he puts his helmet on, there's blood coming from his helmet, and someone comes up and he's talking to him and he can't hear him. If you guys remember that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And then he's stunned. The stun goes away and he's back in the game. You can see his eyes light. The audio comes back on and he says, where do we go from here, sir? And he goes, anywhere but here. So what's the plan? We're going to move anywhere, even though, you know, it might be a bad plan where this is terrible.
Yes.
So to create a plan for that room for you, and what you are going to do as an instructor, as a assistant principal, as an insurance salesman, as whatever. And it talks you through weather, talks you through evacuation, it talks you through and lockdowns. And it talks a little bit about who the boogeyman is and who really's coming for you.
Yeah. You know, these locations that you've been talking about, a lot of people will use the word soft target. Having been in military intelligence, that's one of those phrases we use a lot. Are we seeing, again, another paradigm shift in terms of schools going from a soft target to a hard target, in terms of security? Are we seeing more of that? And what's your thought on that?
Yes. I mean, I've seen our school district, and it's common sense. You just kind of go, oh, well, that makes sense. Our school district, every room on my campus, I don't know about all the other campuses. We have 15, 16, 17, 18 campuses now. But on my campus, they lock from the outside, which makes sense in 1999 or 1998. Mm-hmm. You're locking it down so that kids don't get locked in, or they get in and they lock the door or whatever behind you. So in order for me to secure my classroom, I had to open my door, go out, lock the door, and come back in. Well, the district said, well, that's
insane.
Insane today.
Right.
You know, before Columbine, it made perfect sense. But today it's well, that's we need to fix that. So they invested in the simple aspect of being able to lock the door from both sides. And that's, you know, it was several hundred thousand dollars to do the entire district, but that's common sense money. In construction, what we're seeing now is hardening walls and hardening. This was a new one to me. I've been consulted a couple of times about schools and what do you think? And ballistic glass for registration for those people that first come in contact at the front door. Now, everyone in this room knows that chances of a guy coming in through the front door might be predictable because that's where your administrators are. Maybe he's going to target administration. And in a lot of these schools, you just go right down the hallway. You annihilate everybody that's of importance that have stripes right in a small area. But to harden the glass and putting glass panels between the people coming in and registration, like in a bank. Well, we don't really want it to look like that. So now they have ballistic resistant glass. And I does that mean that they write you a letter, a terse letter saying, hey, don't stop shooting at me? What is a ballistic resistant glass?
You're resistant to it.
I think it slows it down so it doesn't kill you as quickly. Maybe, but I don't know. That's the new. So it looks like glass.
Kill you as quickly.
It looks like glass, but it's not as evil looking, I guess, as bank glass. But hardening walls where you have Kevlar in the walls, which I think is smart.
We even heard about kids getting backpacks that have Kevlar,
right,
and so forth. It's just free business. Yeah, the market will bear. Right. As far as these soft targets, that's great. Is there anything done with the bullying? I noticed with Columbine and a lot of the children. Now, we're not talking about the adults that come in because they just, you know, want to make a name and a splash. But some of these children that come back with some type of bent emotions based on bullying. Have you seen a change in the way schools deal with bullying when you first came in and now?
There's a bullying was never a discussion point, really, when I started in 2000, 2001. Bullying was around when we were all growing up.
Sure, we grew up with it.
Now there are counselors, there's social workers, there's psychologists that are getting involved in people bullying, and they're throwing a lot of money at group therapy, what I would call group therapy. So Robin goes out and bullies another girl.
I've seen
or
it.
A boy.
I've seen it.
A lot, yeah. So part of her discipline might be she has to be in a group where anger management. You know, I mean, if you're doing these things, what I didn't really think too much about in 2000 was that you're bullying, there's a reason you're acting that way. There's a reason you're not a nice person. And so you start asking, you know, two or three questions into these people, you know, mom's not working or she's drinking, dad is in prison or we don't know where dad is. I have to sleep on the couch because
they're angry.
My cousin, yeah, they're just, their life is crap hole and they're acting out. They haven't been able to. So that doesn't excuse them because I believe a high school student at 14 knows right and wrong.
Culpable.
Yeah. And they know right and wrong. But they're how to control it. Let's find you. And so they're dumping a lot of resources, and I think it's paying off. But I think also our client base is growing as a society. I'm seeing more and more of that going, and so it's a bigger tide than it was in 2001. So,
you know, we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But I also want to talk. You've written so many books. Are they all in this same vein, or what kind of books do you have?
No, so my therapy in my life,
doing the bullying,
yes, is writing, and I've written six fiction books, and I got to say I love them. I don't know, the author's a genius, but seven is coming out early next year. And now what I'm doing is I'm going back and I'm starting to audiobook them. The most recent one is Last Ship from Vladivostok.
Common spelling.
And you know, a lot of people say, I've never heard of Vladivostok, and there it is on the news. You know, it's the largest Russian. I go, come on, it's like Paris. And why did you pick it? It just fell off the tongue. So, but they all have kind of a cop or law enforcement or military response. And I think there's some cop humor. They're funny. They're poignant. They're love stories. They're that and their action. I think men can read them. Women will love them. And I just really like them.
If there's someone out there right now listening that's interested in these novels, or a teacher out there or administrator that wants to know more about 47 Seconds, how to get that handbook, because it really is kind of like a how-to handbook, how do they get that?
The website for 47 Seconds is www.47secondsusa.com. And then my website is www.markjwilliams.com. And that will take you to the books, the novels, and then 47 has its own website. So
there you go.
Go do them. And it's on Amazon. You can order them on Amazon. You can order two of them next week, probably on audible.com.
Outstanding.
Jason, we've had two great guests talking about mass shootings. We hit it out of the ballpark. Yeah, doubleheader.
It's a doubleheader. It's a serious subject, and the key word is empowerment. You need to learn. The reality is it's not going away. It's happening all the time, and you don't know when or where. So be prepared and try to do something to save lives, save yourself, and
don't stick your head in the sand.
Just learn. You gotta deal with it. It's reality, and when you have people like Mark and Dave, who are trying to make the world better, they're leaving it better than they found it, then take advantage of these resources. It's fantastic. And I will do my best. I'm going to read 47 Seconds because it'll teach me a lot, and then I'll try to learn something about Vada Lada West.
I'm buying one for my daughter as a teacher.
You got
big
it.
Time.
That
big
one.
Time.
I'll awesome. Change it
Thank
to
you.
Tulsa.
There yeah, there you can, yeah, can you lash up out of Tulsa? Would be great. Write that book, please.
I'm going to read that book, too. 47 Seconds.
And the kinetic. What's that word again?
Kinetic?
No.
Kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic.
It's common spelling.
I learned a new word.
Give me
word
a post-it note. I'll spell it out for you.
Audiology, visual, and
kinesthetic.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. That's it. All right. That's what I'm going to stick. Mark, thank you.
Thanks for all. I'm humbled to be here with you guys. Thank you very much.
Fantastic seeing you. And we will be back for Cop Talk, some stupid suspects, and a very different take on the inspirational close this week.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'll never forget.
Never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call-up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
That was another great guest. I mean, the first segment we had Dave Acosta, SWAT team expertise, lectures around the world telling us that we need to change our mindset, especially those who are not in law enforcement, the teachers, those individuals out there. They need to, rally that inner flight United 93 where it's let's roll. And then the second guest, Mark Williams, retired law enforcement special agent with the Arizona Attorney General's Office, educator. He wrote the book, The Handbook, again, talking about having a plan. Even a bad plan is better than no plan, being frozen. I love this whole mindset of we're not going to go quietly in the night, go out with a bang rather than a whimper. I love that.
And, the key takeaway for me on this is as a police officer, you get a call. You get a call on the radio, you get a dispatcher, or you get a witness yelling and screaming at you. It's coming through the radio. There is an active shooter. You get an address. You get
prepped,
maybe
prepared.
Only 15 seconds, or you do get a full 3-4 minute response time, but you get that warning. If you and I walk into the comedy club to see our friend and nobody calls us and says, hey,
in 30 seconds, there's going to be a guy with a gun. Get prepared. You have truly no notice. And the way our human bodies work, you have the shock value. Oh, it sounded like fireworks. It sounded like a backfire in a car. How often do you hear that? You have your own makeup is sometimes things are so surreal you can't process them. So that causes another delay. Learning, prepping, and mindset. Those are my takeaways from those two guys because I am a civilian. I do worry about it. And if it happened to me, I don't think I would go back to my days in the academy. It would be like instantaneous. What do you do? And you're going to only act the right way for yourself and others if you're prepared and you've educated yourself.
Before the show, me and you were talking, and you shared with me something that I do as well. When we go into a store, shopping mall, large event, concert, I always think about what if. It's something that we did as young recruits coming out of the academy.
Always.
What if, what if, what if. Putting in different scenarios, how it could, if, where are you at right now in order to give that address.
Right.
And same thing with these large groups where could there be someone coming in with a gun? What would you do? How would you do it? That is something, I hate to say it, regular civilians need to think of as well, because unfortunately this is now the new normal. And the reason I say that is in the beginning of that guest regarding the Mark Williams, when he was talking about the Columbine school shooting, I named a bunch of places like Moses Lake, Washington, Bethel, Alaska, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
These places no one knows about.
I was gonna say, and I wanted to mention it earlier, guess what you didn't say? Chicago, New York City, Houston, LA,
exactly.
Phoenix.
Thank you.
Not one time did you say that.
No.
These are obscure. I wouldn't even classify them as no-name places. They are everyday places.
If it happened there, it can happen anywhere.
Oh, my goodness. It can happen.
Truly.
Anywhere. And again, we can debate so many different topics, but sticking to the black and white reality, it's happening. It's going to continue to happen for, unfortunately, the foreseeable future. And there is nothing wrong with getting in the habit of when you walk into a restaurant, requesting the booth where guess what you can see? The entrances, the windows,
back
the parking
against
lot.
The wall.
There's no reason when you're in a grocery store to think about which aisle am I on right now and where's the closest exit. There's nothing wrong with looking who else is on this aisle right now. You know what? There is a 10-year-old right there with his mom. Whatever happens, that's where I'm going first. I'm not running out the door. I'm going to that person first. And listen, there's no shame in hiding, running, dying in that fashion. And there's no shame in trying to do what you think's right at the time and let people on the media or other witnesses later call you a hero. That none of that matters in the moment.
It's what you
Whatever you can do for others, and of course for yourself, you want to go home to your family. There's no shame in any of that. The shame lies in ignoring it. Acting
freezing.
Like, well, it won't happen to me until it does. That's what everybody's going to say.
Yes, yes.
So educate, prepare, and hopefully it won't. Pray to God it will never happen to us or the people we care about, but it's happening. So let's
two
get ready.
Two great guests. I just applaud both of them for what
Incredible.
They do. And now I want to applaud you, Jason, because you're going to take us again, lifting that mantle to greatness and a heroic headline.
This is a great heroic headline. Are you kidding me right now? Learned about it here in the city of Phoenix, but this is nationwide.
It is.
Get what this person is doing. This past weekend, officers in the Black Mountain Precinct here in Phoenix had an opportunity to meet an amazing man named Rodney Smith. He is with Raising Men Lawn Care Service in Huntsville. He is on a 50-state, 50-lawn mowing with cops tour. 50 states,
amazing.
50 lawns, and he's doing it with cops. All across the U.S., taking care of people's lawns who could use the help. People who can use help. Veterans, single parents, disabled, the elderly, etc. And he's doing it with police officers. And of course, cops love this kind of stuff. They're going to jump on board. You cannot, when I say you, I'm talking to our listeners. Cops, when they find out about this, if it's their day off, they will jump on it. They will not say, oh, it's my day off. No, they will jump on stuff like this. It is awesome. As part of his mission, Rodney also enlists the support of any and all local law enforcement who will help him because he wants to bridge the gap between, guess what, the community and police officers. Rodney says, quote, what I'm trying to do from this tour in particular is bring communities together. I'm trying to let people know that the police are there to protect and serve. There are so many good police officers out there, explained Rodney. 50 states, 50 lawns. You talk about leaving the world better than you found it and making a lot of people feel good. That is a heroic headline if I've absolutely ever heard one. Awesome job, Rodney. God bless you. And thank you. I wish I'd have known about that last weekend. I'd love to go out there to meet him. So with that, Darren?
It's about the little things. It really is. Those little things can grow. And speaking of a little thing, authorities say a Florida man has been arrested for being belligerent and giving his girlfriend, you ready for this? A wet willy. That's right. A St. Louis County Sheriff deputy went to the home after Joseph Siriki's girlfriend told authorities he was drunk on the living room floor when she returned from work early this month. According to the affidavit, he accompanied her and her daughter to another home where the boyfriend then continued to be belligerent. He grabbed her hand, pulled her arm, but most of all, that's right, he gave her a wet willy by sticking his wet finger in her ear. The daughter confirmed this disgusting account. The names weren't released because it's kind of embarrassing. So that is the first stupid suspect story. Next one, we go all the way from Florida to Australia. This stupid suspect... this is a pretty cool story. Australian police sergeant was in a suit and tie doing a live interview outside a courthouse about some kind of case he was on when he heard some shouting, and there's video. This video is great, by the way. He turns around. He completely ignores the cameras, completely ignores what's going on. He turns and goes right into cop mode, turns around. He sees a suspicious-looking guy being chased. That is suspicious when you see somebody being chased. He then... just does this textbook tackle, takes him to the ground. And again, somebody running is like throwing a dog to a bone to a cop. I mean, we run after that person running. It's what you do. Turns out this creep made a very inappropriate sexual comment to a teenage girl, and her dad was the one chasing her. So I love this. And hint to criminals, don't run past a TV-talking cop as part of your getaway route. It just won't end well, I'm telling you. And the last... our last stupid suspect story. This is the headline. Teen stabs older brother. Why? I'd rather be in jail than spend 8 hours in a car with him. It's kind of funny. It's disgusting, but it's funny. Tennessee teens show this week that even the closest family bond, brotherhood, is no exception to being stuck in a car on a family vacation. I keep thinking of the movie Vacation, right, where everything goes wrong. This 13-year-old boy vacationing in Florida stabbed his older brother because he did not want to sit in the car with him for the drive back to Tennessee, a long drive. The teen showed no sign of remorse or empathy, saying, quote, I stabbed him and I don't care about going to jail. I'd rather be in jail than 8 hours in a car with him. This gets kind of uglier. It all began in a parked car in the driveway of the panhandle town of Crestview, Florida. They didn't even get out of the driveway when this went bad, this long trip. A 13-year-old reported that he was angry at his 15-year-old brother for teasing him, and that's why he attacked him with a multi-tool, stabbing him 3 times in the arm. I'm thinking of those Ronco pocket fishermen. I don't know. But whatever this stabbing tool was, he stabbed him. The older brother called 911, and all's well because the 13-year-old went to jail.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now
yeah.
Your brother gets your video game, dude.
Yeah,
you're screwed.
Yeah, and watch out for people with that Ronco pocket fisherman. Yeah, it can be very dangerous. Yeah. Wow. So that is the stupid suspect stories. And now for our closing different inspirational segment, we're going to go to Jason Shackerly.
And by different,
yes.
I will tell you this is
you got my attention.
0% inspirational this week.
Oh, no.
And I will apologize in advance if you do not want to hear a horrible, horrible story that is going to shock you and infuriate you, then by all means, turn off your podcast right now. But I believe very strongly in transparency. And this is something that you hear bad stories every day. I mean, every day there
are bad things happen.
Just this week, you've got the shooting in Odessa and Midland. You've got all those people dying in that tragic boat fire. There's terrible stories every day, but there, once in a while, is a story that is so unacceptable, so shocking. And because of what we do on the show, trying to be positive about law enforcement, again, transparency, certain things need to be said. And some people out there might be aware of this story. It hasn't been as big of a news story as I think it should, but this is about a 911 dispatcher in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Her name is Donna Renau, I guess is how you say it. And I'll be honest, I don't care how you say her last name. She was called the other night. This is not even a week ago. She was called by a woman named Deborah Stevens. And Deborah was on her paper route. She accidentally drove into some floodwaters. And this is one of those headlines when you see it, it's a little bit shocking. If you take the time, which I encourage everybody, don't just listen to my opinion, which will probably get increasingly bad as I go through this. Read the transcript for yourself and listen to this call. It is one of the most sickening things ever. This woman is begging for help. She is saying, I'm scared. I don't know how to swim. Over the course of 20 minutes, let me give you some examples again, in quotes, of what Deborah was saying and what this 911 dispatcher said to her. Will you pray with me? No, you can pray and I'll listen. Can I call my mom, please, so I can tell her that I love her? No, stay on the phone with me. I'm so sorry, ma'am. I'm so scared. Well, you're the one who drove into the water. When are they coming to help me? Whenever they get there. Ma'am, I think I'm going to die. I think I'm going to throw up. Well, go ahead and puke. You're in the water. Ma'am, I can't breathe. You're obviously breathing because you're yelling. I love police officers more than anybody. You know who I love more than police officers?
Dispatchers.
Dispatchers. And do you know
Absolutely.
Why? Because you talk about a true lifeline.
Silent heroes.
And countless times we hear on the news, you hear how calm and collected. And what you don't see behind the scenes, you talk about multitasking. They're talking to you in your moment of need. They're typing onto at least one computer. They're talking to other, whether it be police, fire, state troopers, whoever they have to get. It is amazing what these dispatchers can do. And human kindness has got to, Dave said it in the beginning, what do police departments care about? They care about
the innocence.
This woman clearly didn't. And then it got worse for me. Mm. Interim police chief, and the key word being interim, his name is Danny Baker, and God help my soul if that guy ever actually gets the job. He shocked me with his press conference was even more vile than that. Deborah Stevens drowned. Deborah Stevens is dead right now, and it could have been prevented, but the fear, the anxiety, I cannot even fathom what this woman went through and the callousness, the cruelty that this dispatcher showed. And then Danny Baker said, basically, well, we'll review our policy, and she didn't do anything criminally wrong. And when I saw his press conference, I'm like, you are absolutely the worst example of a cop I have ever seen. I hope to God he never becomes the full chief. And I am sorry to be so pissed off and negative, but that kind of cruelty escapes me. How is it not natural to have human kindness, to want to help somebody else? And you signed up for that job, to treat somebody like that. So again, if you want to learn more about the story, don't just listen to me and my angry voice. Listen to this call. And you will, over the course of 20 minutes, you will be so sick to your stomach, so infuriated. And it is definitely going around. This woman is in hiding. Mm-hmm. She is having her life threatened. You know how Twitter can get. Yeah. And I'm not advocating for any of that. But this is a story that can be learned from by everybody. Just the worst story of how one person treated another one that I've heard in a long time.
And your inspirational message is this. That outraged all of us. It's gone viral. Because, yes, inspirationally speaking, we all love people out there. That's why we do what we do, to include the 911 dispatchers. They're there to save lives. So this is an anomaly. This is the atypical. This is the rare exception. So the inspirational message really is how angry this is making us feel.
Yeah. Just, we are here to help others. We are here to show human kindness. Don't we expect that in return? What if that is one of your family members that is going through that, and their last person they speak to it treats them that way. That is not something her family is ever going to get over. And I hope there are repercussions. I'm sure there's a lot of great officers at Fort
Smith PD. She's in the wrong job.
Yeah, you say it all the time.
Oh no,
Jason.
She's out of that job now. She's done. But
she was always in the wrong job. If you could do that, you were in the wrong job.
You say it all the time. Why'd you put the uniform on?
I'm sorry to throw Fort Smith PD under the bus. I'm sure there's a ton of great officers, but I'm throwing Donna under the bus and Interim Police Chief Danny Baker. You absolutely, please, for the love of all people who care about cops, retire and get the hell out of this business. Sorry to end on such a sour note. Human kindness, everybody. I'll go back to it immediately as soon as I'm done with this segment. Darren and Robin, thank you. Next week's show is September 11th. It will obviously...
Yeah. Special 9/11.
Special 9/11. It will hit home for a lot of people. Never, ever, ever forget, no matter how much time goes by, we can't, and we will have a great show for you next week. And until then, God bless, be safe, and we'll see you.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide Networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.